Hello from Edinburgh, Scotland. Today in New Testament Character Podcast 48, we'll be looking at Silas. Silas, also called Silvanus, is one of the colleagues of the Apostle Paul. Now, Paul had dozens of colleagues. In our New Testament Character Podcast series, we've already looked at a number of these, like Titus, Timothy, Demas, Phoebe. Soon we'll be looking at Luke and Apollos and Barnabas, Priscilla, Aquila, and Lydia. Actually, next time we'll be looking at Lydia. We're not going to have time to look at Epaphras or Trophimus, Gaius, Urbanus, Sopater, or Tychicus. There are just so many of them. They'll just have to remain unsung heroes. Silas is referred to in Acts 15 to 18, and he's called Silas in those chapters. Now, in the letters of 1 Peter, 2 Corinthians, and both Thessalonian letters, he's called Silvanus. And Silas is simply a shorter way, a nickname for Silvanus. What did he do? Well, he's called a prophet in Acts 15. He's one of two prophets who are sent down to Antioch to encourage the saints. A prophet, in some sense, brings the word of God, or a word from God. It's difficult, I admit, to understand with great certainty exactly what the New Testament prophets did in comparison with the Old Testament prophets, where we have a much better idea. But anyway, he's a prophet. He can also write and think. He assists both Paul and Peter in their letter writing. In fact, he's credited with the composition with Paul of 1 Thessalonians and 2 Thessalonians. At the end of 1 Peter, we read, "With the help of Silvanus, whom I regard as a faithful brother, I have written to you briefly." So he assisted Peter as well in writing his letter. In addition to being a prophet and a writer, he's also a colleague. Now, Paul and Barnabas were quite close, and that made their breakup. There was a strong argument, disagreement, made it all the more tragic. That's at the end of Acts 15. And after that unfortunate incident, Paul takes Silas along with him in lieu of Barnabas on the trip to the very cities where Paul and Barnabas had established congregations. Perhaps compared with Barnabas, Silas is more an assistant than a partner, and yet we believe that they were close, maybe not as close as people like Barnabas or Timothy or Titus. When I read the letters to Timothy, for example, I get a feeling that there is a very close emotional relationship. Paul is very, very fond of Timothy, whom he is mentoring. With Silas, we just don't know. But they did have some interesting times together, especially in Philippi. Philippi is a city in, well, what was in ancient Macedonia, just north of Greece, a major Roman city. I've had the chance to be there, and I think I've shared before, I've even been able to preach in the Roman theater without any persecution at all. I've been there literally and geographically, but not in the sense that Paul was, not in the sense in which Silas was there and what he tasted, the troubles. If I had opposition, sure. Whoever's been a Christian for a while will have trouble. We'll have opposition, no escaping it. But my opposition, maybe you're like me, it's been minor. Oh, once I was hauled before the authorities at Duke University, the dean of students, the minister. It's kind of exciting, actually. I think it's because of evangelism, at least they said it was. I was being too evangelistic, and people were complaining. Now, I know two things. I know first, I probably was overdoing it. I was insensitive. I didn't necessarily take no for an answer, and I should have, because Jesus talks about sensitivity. On the other hand, the people who are complaining were the religious people, the people who claimed to follow Christ and yet were not evangelistic. Life is often messy like that. Once I and another brother were hauled out of Hyde Park where we were preaching in public. Some other groups got jealous because we had our numbers were better. The police came, marched us away, but we didn't go to jail. In Sweden, oh, this was interesting, there were front page articles in both of the major newspapers, in Svenska Dagbladet and Dagens Nyheter. Now, looking back now, I see journalists were seeking something sensational in the low season. It's summertime. What kind of story do we have? I mean, when they're putting me and my family on the front page, they're pretty desperate. But they're looking for something exotic. And here's a foreigner, an American, married to a Briton. And what are they doing? And I learned many things about myself. For example, that I trained my followers in commando tactics in the jungles of Argentina. I think these journalists just made stuff up. It was quite interesting. And probably, if anything, it strengthened the church. I've been before the authorities, the police, the CID in Singapore. The machine guns and the warnings were somewhat intimidating. I trusted God, but I wasn't shot. I wasn't in jail. Do you have stories like that? Well, listen, we're going to look at Paul and Silas, because I think whether you've been through a little persecution like me, or a lot of persecution, or severe persecution like Paul and Silas, there's some things in this story that will apply to us, apply to you and to me. There was a girl, young girl, who had some kind of spirit by which she could tell the future. And she was a novelty and made money for her handlers. We read about that in Acts 16:16. Well, eventually she became so irritating, and it was hurting the credibility or the witness of Paul, that he basically commanded the spirit to leave her. Now, there's a separate character podcast I did a couple years ago on her, but that's the background as we begin reading in Acts 16:19. When her owners realized their hope of making money was gone, they seized Paul and Silas and dragged them into the marketplace to face the authorities. They brought them before the magistrates and said, "These men are Jews, are throwing our city into an uproar by advocating customs unlawful for us Romans to accept or practice." Okay. As mentioned, this situation, this persecution, has an economic motivation. Someone's losing money. We'll see something similar in Acts 19, when the trade in silver statues of the goddess Artemis is affected, and people are very upset. Not many people persecute others just for the fun of it. There's a reason, there's a motive, and, well, when money is in there, that's a strong motive. Missionaries, fortunately, were in usually small groups as they moved about, two by two. Maybe that was the most common. So fortunately, when Paul and Silas are dragged into the marketplace, they don't have to suffer this ordeal alone. Now, Paul was very familiar with that. Silas had Paul with him right there. Oh, notice what they say. These men are Jews. True, at least from a Jewish background. And notice, they're advocating customs unlawful for us Romans. So they're saying they're Jews, not Romans. Well, it's not always either or. Paul is a Jewish Christian, but he is also a Roman. Silas is a Roman citizen like Paul. Well, the crowd didn't know that, and the magistrates, those who administered justice, supposedly hadn't checked, and they didn't know it either. Verse 22, the crowd joined in the attack against Paul and Silas, and the magistrates ordered them to be stripped and beaten with rods. Ouch. After they'd been severely flogged, they were thrown into prison, and the jailer was commanded to guard them carefully. When he received these orders, he put them in the inner cell and fastened their feet in the stocks. About midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God, and other prisoners were listening to them. Let's pause there. I'm really struck when I was reading Acts 16, preparing for this talk. I was struck by the verbs, the vivid, strong verbs that we just read. Listen, what happened to Silas? What happened to Paul? They were seized, dragged, stripped, beaten, flogged, thrown, and fastened. As Luke is retelling this event, he's made it incredibly vivid. Seized, dragged, stripped, beaten, flogged, thrown, fastened. That's the violent treatment that they received. Yes, I know words can be violent. It's not necessarily force or the violence of weapons or pushing, shoving, hitting. But that's what happened to Paul so many times. And it wasn't just really a miscarriage of justice, there's a lack of due process. The authorities wrongly arrested him. They didn't do their due diligence. It wasn't fair, which made me ask myself a question, Douglas. When I feel like I'm being treated unfairly, do I pout? Well, Paul and Silas are praying and singing. And I always assumed that they were singing happy songs. Sing ye be happy today. Maybe they were. Of course, if they were singing psalms, so many of the psalms include darker prayers, though, okay, situationally more appropriate. Maybe they were singing about the injustice. Hard to know. But it's as they're singing that an earthquake comes. Look at this. Suddenly, there was such a violent earthquake that the foundations of the prison were shaken. At once, all the prison doors flew open, and everyone's chains came loose. The jailer woke up, and when he saw the prison doors open, he drew a sword and was about to kill himself because he thought all the prisoners had escaped. But Paul shouted, "Don't harm yourself. We're all here." Now, while Silas and Paul are praying and singing, there's this violent earthquake. It is an earthquake-prone part of the world. And then the doors just open and the chains come loose. This reminds us of another release from chains in Acts chapter 12 with Peter. There are many parallels between Peter's experiences and deeds in Acts 1 to 12 and Paul's in the later chapters. Peter, of course, escaped prison. The guards were in a daze. They didn't really know what was happening. He walks right out and, well, Paul doesn't leave. Paul is free, but he stays right there and calls out to the jailer, "No need to kill yourself. We know you're responsible for us. We're right here. We're not running away." Well, it's a well-known story, this conversion of the Philippian jailer and his family. Maybe we'll do a podcast on him. Let's continue. The jailer called for lights, rushed in, and fell trembling before Paul and Silas. So Paul and Silas are singing in the dark, and the jailer calls for lights, and he brings them out of this dark, cavernous, the central part of the prison. And he says, "Sirs, what must I do to be saved?" And of course, Paul and Silas reply, "Believe in the Lord Jesus, and you will be saved, you and your household." And then they spoke the word of the Lord to him and to all the others in his house. It's an amazing story. At that hour of the night, the jailer took them and washed their wounds. So Paul and Silas, their wounds haven't been treated right. I mean, you don't want to get infection. The jailer washes them. And then he receives a washing of a different kind. Immediately, he and all his household are baptized. The jailer brings Paul and Silas into his house and sets a meal before them. Now, that's different. That's really different than the previous experience with the authorities. And that man is filled with joy because he'd come to believe in God, he and his whole household. When it was daylight, finally, the magistrates sent their officers to the jailer with the order, "Release those men." I guess they thought one night in the cooler was enough, especially after the beating they had. And the jailer relays the message to Paul. "The magistrates have ordered that you and Silas be released. Now you can leave. Go in peace." But Paul said to the officers, "They beat us publicly without a trial, even though we are Roman citizens, and threw us into prison, and now they want to get rid of us quietly." Now, what's Paul doing here? Is he pouting? Is he trying to rub it in and make these guys humiliated? I don't think that's his purpose. It has to do with the gospel. If those who are regarded as the messengers of Christ are punished by the state, and it seems that that may have been justified, that could bring reproach on the gospel. That could make people think, "Oh, well, yeah, maybe Jesus isn't so powerful." It was the message that was being sent. Either way, the authorities did not want to own their mistake, but in this case, if they did, then that was much better for the Christian community and for the watching world. I think that's what's going on. course, they were escorted from prison, Paul and Silas. They both get an escort. They're Roman citizens. And they're asked to leave the city, which they do, but not immediately. And the final verse of 16, verse 40, Paul and Silas, after they came out of prison, went to Lydia's house, where they met with the brothers and sisters and encouraged them, and then they left. And that's an amazing story. What else happens with Silas? Well, afterwards, we read about them in Thessalonica. After Paul and Silas had passed through Amphipolis and Apollonia, that's in 17:1, they end up in Thessalonica. And they have some success. Some of the Thessalonians were persuaded and joined Paul and Silas. While they were searching for Paul and Silas to bring them out to the assembly, because persecution was starting, basically, Paul and Silas leave. So they work, and this is right after Philippi. The next city is Thessalonica in Acts 17. The next city is Berea. We read, that very night the believers sent Paul and Silas off to Berea. Berea is not that far from Thessalonica. And from there, Paul leaves Thessalonica. Silas, however, stays behind with Timothy. And after this point, he's associated, let's say, exclusively with Timothy, only secondarily with Paul. And you can read in Acts 17 and 18 about that point. And then Silas is in Corinth. And there he preaches along with Paul and Timothy. And we see that trio also mentioned in 2 Corinthians 1:19. So what does this all mean for us? I've got a few thoughts. Four, in fact. First, let's not be afraid of opposition. An extra reason, besides Jesus and Paul's promise that it's unavoidable and Peter's promise that the Spirit of glory rests upon us, and that extra reason is relational. Opposition draws people together when they share their hardships or when they share about their hardships. When we go through tough times with others, it strengthens our bond and we have those memories. Some things I've been through alone. Others I've been through with other brothers or with my wife. And that kind of opposition can draw us close. Here's my second thought. When you're in trouble, sing. I know in James it says when you're happy, sing. And when you're in trouble, you know, pray. And that's also true. But singing, whether these were happy songs or doleful songs, songs of lament or those sad psalms we see in the book of Psalms, sing. It's therapeutic. It's great. Third, be faithful. Peter tells us that Silas is a faithful brother. You know, we will not all be perfect, but we can be faithful. It actually feels pretty good when busy people need us and they can depend on us. That Silas is that kind of a person. And last, let's accept that there will be differing degrees of closeness between Christians, even when they spend a significant amount of time together. Paul had a certain relationship with Silas. It seems to have been good, but it's different than it was than his relationship with Timothy or Titus. Jesus was close to the 12, but especially close to the 3. We've got to accept that and not be demanding. It's okay. Don't be afraid of opposition. When you're in trouble, sing. Be faithful, like Silas, and accept that there are differing degrees of closeness. And our next New Testament character podcast, we'll be looking at an amazing person. Her name is Lydia.